from. And perhaps we could start off talking, Mrs. Horton, about, you know, your first connections with the women's movement. Then we can move on to you, to, you know, to when you were more intimately involved, if that's convenient for you. It's on.
Good. My mother and two eldest sisters, two both about 18 or 19 years older than I, were keen militants, captured by the Pankhursts, and it was when they were taking part. In fact, one of my sisters, the second one, nearly got launched into Buckingham Palace. Neither of them were caught at any time in prison. And so, and my mother was very enthusiastic, and when she went out to South America about 1909 or 10, held drawing room meetings or studio meetings in her father's studio, and established groups of suffrage people there. I don't think there were any question of militancy at that point, out there, anyhow. And then, of course, the vote came along when the First War came to an end.
Mm.
Partial vote, you had ever.
Over 30.
Or a husband.
Yes, yes, yes.
And have furniture.
Yes.
You had a furniture or a husband.
Yes.
And over 30. And then I went, when my parents were abroad, I was dumped on my younger sister with our grandparents in Edinburgh. And there, of course, it was very much the last thing to talk about militancy, but my other sisters tried to keep us going with it. We went round with them.
Could I just interrupt you? Why there? Why wouldn't one talk in Edinburgh about militancy?
Edinburgh's 20 years, then, at any rate, at least 20 years behind London.
I see, yes. It was
when my elder sister came up before the at the outbreak of the First World War, she was in uniform, and she herself had made her skirt a bit shorter than the regulation. She couldn't bear the sight of it, and she was followed by small boys running around after her.
Was she really?
Just as much as I was going to school, because I wore in London in 1915 or 16, I wore a leather boys kind of. On my back instead of on one shoulder, and they chased after me. They were called after me.
Mm.
No, Edinburgh is very, that wasn't in Edinburgh, it was London.
Mm.
But Edinburgh was
that's
very
interesting.
Much behind.
But anyway, militancy was not strong in Scotland generally.
I don't think so.
Mm. I think that does fit with what I've been
yes,
told.
I don't think there was any organisation for it, but there was suffrage.
Yes, yes. So, sorry, I interrupted you. I couldn't resist that one.
No, that's the sort of thing one doesn't realise.
Yes.
Well, when...
You were staying with your sister, weren't you?
You were staying with my grandparents in Edinburgh, but when we came... We didn't come back to 1915 when the war broke out and my parents came home. And, as I say, Mother had been nursing the thought of suffrage out. Buenos Aires. My elder sisters by this time were qualified in some way, but they had taken just as the whim pleased them. The one thing they were determined against was getting married, and neither of them ever did, and they were sought after very much, and were horrified when I did.
Why were they determined? Was it, they just wanted independence, you mean?
Independence, that's right. When we did reunite as a family, they threatened to put their birth certificates outside their bedroom doors to remind my father how old. It was a matriarchy at home. My father adored his wife, but I don't think he followed in her political thoughts.
Could I ask you, I don't know your maiden name, Mrs. Horton, and who your father was, I mean...
Certainly. My maiden name is the awkward one of Kay Robertson. K-A-Y, one word.
Oh, yes.
And Robertson,
yes.
Both Scotch. My father was a portrait painter, but spent the best part of his life, I suppose, or the best part of his work, out in Buenos Aires.
Mm.
And then three grandparents were Edinburgh born. So really, I don't know what they call us under the new act in Scotland, or what rights we have.
And your mother was what before she married then?
She was a miniaturist.
I see. I really meant her name. I mean.
Oh, sorry, Walters.
I see. Yes.
George yes. Walters was her.
Yes. And your sisters, you say, were trained. What as?
Well, my elder sister was trained for singing, and she went on the stage, and she finally developed a first-class practice of medical gymnast for children under doctors.
Mm.
What is done now, but was very little done in those days.
I see. Yes.
And this was from our homes in Chelsea. And then during the war, my second sister, who had gone to the art school in Edinburgh, and was a very good painter, but during the war she realised she couldn't make a living with it, and she went into some government office where they called Oban, to distinguish it from Oban City. I remember that.
So she became a civil servant?
Temporarily.
I see, yes.
Afterwards, she had a very interesting appointment at University College London. She went there to do some temporary work, and Sir Gregory Foster, the provost at the time, happened to see her handwriting, was rather struck by it, and got to know her and like her and took her on his staff as what they called publication secretary, which was responsibility for the production of the school calendar, calendar,
yes.
And organising public lectures,
yes.
And being hostess at the tea parties or fun fights that they had beforehand.
I see.
Quite an interesting job.
And she stayed there all her life, really?
Yes, she was killed from the end.
Mm. Mm. So, the names of your sisters are Ellen's the elder one, is she?
Yes.
Yes, I see. Because, you see, another thing which perhaps you might have a view on, really, is why artists are so prominent in the suffragette movement. Actually, I have noticed this. I mean, there's end of connections.
They had a society of their own.
Yes, the artists
suffrage. Have you seen our banners?
I've seen some of them in Fawcett House. Yes. I mean, is there any reason you can think of why artists should be attracted? Did you ever feel this yourself, or am I really just imagining that there was a connection?
No, but I think artists are prepared to look with fresh eyes at anything.
Mm.
And never conformist.
Yes. So they'll dissent on other things as well as on this thing. Yes. I suppose there is a lot of that in it. But there are a lot of artists and painters and novelists as well who are involved.
Yes.
It's interesting. Anyway, we've got you to school then. this is working, yes. I don't know why the light isn't on.
It still isn't on.
It's still not on, but I mean it's working, so I don't think there's any problem. At least I think. Yes, there's no problem. It's all coming through all right.
Can you take it coming back?
Yes, I'll just check. We've got you to school anyway, and you went to...
Yes, I did SARS intended to teaching. When I say I did SARS, of course, it was the early days of the change of the examinations, and I got to University College and worked out a course that would avoid having to go through inter again, because I had in fact done higher schools, which were not at that moment accepted by the university as higher school, which would replace the intermediate. And the provost got very cross about this, wouldn't believe me. So I had to go back to him with the evidence. And he said, well, that's what I've made, so got the university to make special regulations for. You can take your past degree subjects and that first year exam will do for your other. So I took physics, I dropped physics for a year, did chemistry and mathematics, and graduated 2 years after I got to college, instead of three, thanks to the provost. And then took physics. And the pass degrees I took first was the last of the general pass that you couldn't take honours in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took the first of the honours in physics. But then I couldn't teach. But there was something else. Oh yes, how did I get in touch with the NCEC. While at college, I was active in the student movements and was sent out to Denmark for an international students union, because the International Student Union was just being, National Union of Students was just born.
Mm-hmm.
And the French were flapping around getting an international student union formed, which deliberately ignored the Germans, who represented their unions representing German speaking, and therefore Austria was included.
Mm.
But the Germans wouldn't admit this, you see, wanted to be in, and the French were so much tied to the constitution that they had developed the Mela Constitution, and then large Great Dane would stand up and traduction, cool us down. It was a great experience. I've never forgotten it.
So that introduced you directly to political activity in a way.
It was the only political activity that I had before I went to the NCEC, in USEC.
Yes, yes.
But it took me into the National Union of Students, where I met Hermes, whom I happened to meet on a bus afterwards, and she knew Eva Hubbock, and had heard that Eva Hubbock was needing a successor.
Who's Hermes? And
May Hermes. She's, I don't know what she got active in. Travel. Student travel, I think.
She was another student, was she?
Not a student.
I see. Mm.
Not at my college, she's better coming. And she had a sister who was a sculptor. But Eva Hubbock was the parliamentary secretary of the National Union of Societies for Equal Citizenship, as the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies had changed its name at the end of the war.
Yes, yes. And she got a job in Morley College, didn't she?
She did, principal.
Yes, and so that's where you come in a way, is it?
Yes. Did I know her before? No, I didn't. I knew Hermes, met her on a bus, and she told me the job was going. See, so she said, I think you ought to apply. And I did, with the backing of Iverson McAdam. Have you come across him?
No, I haven't. He's not related to Elizabeth McAdam at all.
No.
No, I haven't.
He was very active in the National Union of Students, an ex-army man, of course, and has since, he's titled now, if he's still alive, at Chatham House. Was very
good. Oh, yes.
And I'd been honorary secretary, or I forgot what titles we had, but he was an organizing secretary, I think, of the National Union of Students. And I was still working as a vice president, I said, after I went up to Deakin College work. And he backed me. So I had these testimonials, as it were, and applied for the job. And I got to like to give it to me. After, I must tell you about that committee, existing society of the NUSEC executive, at the time of my appointment, interviewed me and another young woman. Mrs. Corbett Asher was in the chair, the very bad cold. She pushed me away from her, you know, I was sitting beside her, not to get a cold. There was Mary Stocks, Miss Lady Leighton, you know, liberal, Eleanor Rathbone, Elizabeth McAdam, Helen Ward, and Mrs. Taylor from Scotland, Eva Hubbock. All names. I mean, all practical.
All distinguished people.
Distinguished. And I always remember Mary Stocks asking me, I was asked if I supported the NUSEC principles. I said, well, I tried to put your 10 points of your program to practice. Well, you all wear with one birth control, of course. And Mary Stocks said, and how would you do that?
So there must have been hoots of laughter all around, wasn't there?
I doubt if there were.
Well, really, they were quite a serious body, were they?
Oh, very serious. They took themselves so serious.
Did they really?
Yes, but the last conversation I had with Eva Hubbock was only 10 days before her death. She was a cousin of my very great friend Alice Franklin.
Oh, yes.
Have you come across
her? I come across the Franklins. I'm very interested in family. Yes.
There was Hugh Franklin, who was a militant.
Mm.
There was every political colour in that part of that family. And Alice Franklin was at the back of the formation of the Women's Institute, because she was the land army in the First War, administrator.
They were a Jewish family, weren't they? Yes.
She wasn't a practicing Jew, but the father family were, and some of them still. And Eva Havoc. I'm sorry, Mary Strux.
Talking about seriousness and what you were talking to
Eva Havoc. And Alice was wondering why there weren't more distinguished women in the field. And we decided that it really was part of the success of the work. They had jobs now, isn't it? Sit at home idly, or not idly, working out what they should be doing.
Yes. And Eva agreed with that, did she, really?
Yes.
In a sense, the whole sign of the success of women's movements is that they do themselves out of business.
Societies have changed their names. The London Society, Fawcett Society, every now and then, stop and think, where are we now? Are we still wanted? And we were critical of ourselves, which I think is a very good thing. And I suppose we still are.
So you never became an old girls' association, so to speak. No. You were there for a function, so to speak. Yes. So you got the job. I didn't ask you. I'm not quite clear. You went to North London Collegiate School, did you?
Under Mrs. Brown.
Skated over that.
Second head, and then Miss Drummond the third.
I see. And that was your secondary school, was it? Before that, you went.
It was a school in Edinburgh.
I see. Yeah.
Which was a very good one. Very well. My sister and I still purr at the paperwork.
Do you really?
Foundations of our teaching were so good.
Yes. Scottish education generally was very good, wasn't
it? It was quite an interesting time. Up to the early part of the century, Scottish history hadn't been recognised as a subject for itself. Then it was. And we had it introduced to our syllabuses. And we were examined by inspectors of some sort. So I suppose it was a similar line here, but in France of here.
That's interesting. But you're ceasing to be a student and you're applying for this job at the National Union. What did you see this as leading to, if anything? And did you envisage a political career for yourself, or how were you seeing life, so to speak?
No, they were having difficulty in getting somebody because we were just coming up to the 1928. That's right. I went in December 27th. Because I was under 30, I was qualified to apply. That was my one qualification, as far as I could see. Except that they found I was very enthusiastically backed. Mary Stocks always hankered after another candidate. The last time I saw her, she's still talking about her.
Rather tactless.
Well, that didn't matter. And I was taken out to lunch by Miss Rathbone and Mrs. Hubbock to sort of vet me a bit more. I took the trouble to read Eleanor Rathbone's family allowance business.
That was shrewd, yes.
Yes, it wasn't. I never mentioned it.
What were they like, actually, over lunch? It must be a rather vivid memory for you, that lunch.
I knew both of them quite well before I was finished. Eleanor Rathbone was vague. She was helped enormously by being well enough off to have very good staff, and Elizabeth McAdam lived with her and organised life for her. But she would, at a committee meeting, she'd take her toque off and put it down on the ground, then she'd take it up and put it down again any way round. And the story goes that her staff used to have to see that her hat was on the right way when she went out. Eva Hubbard was a difficult lady in many ways, quite brilliant, and did awfully good work at Morley. And with us, she was always fighting half the committee.
Was she really?
Who disputed her minutes every now and then. And I don't quite know why. I mean, what it was wrong. This was just before my time. But she still stayed there as chairman of the parliamentary committee when I was being initiated.
But there's no sort of cause that you could see as to why she should be at odds with the committee?
No, apart from except for the word personalities, I think.
Yes. Yes. And when you say she was difficult, I mean, that's not something I've heard anyone say before, possibly because I've talked to her children and so on. Yeah. I mean, I have the impression, you see, of her as a person who makes contact. She's got contact everywhere.
Yes.
And she's, in a sense, I suppose you could say this is an impolite word, but a fixer, in a way. That is, she rather reverse of difficult, in a way. I mean, she's making things go, organising things on. Now, where's that wrong, then, would you say?
I would say difficult to work for.
I see.
Because unless you know what she's aiming at exactly, it may not be the right line.
Mm.
And there's a case in point. There was they wanted a conference on either birth control or India, because Mother India was coming out.
Yes.
I can't remember quite which it was, but going round the table of representatives of organisations that were being invited to the conference, they were all obviously wanting to know a good deal more before they committed themselves. Well, without giving any lead, but getting them settled about a date and a time and an hour and a place and organisations to invite other than those that were there, then the meeting says, well, then we'll have our conference on such and such a day, not having got the first principles accepted, as I could see. I've always found that difficult.
Yes, she go bull at a gate in a way, wouldn't she?
That's right, yes.
Interesting, yes.
Oh, she got her own way.
Yeah.
And the other thing she did was very naughty. She was come along to a committee of the National Council of Social Service during the First World War. I've forgotten which one it was.
The Second World War, you mean?
Yes, that wasn't at the university before. And she'd arrived late. And she did this several times. Arrived late, insist on going back on something that had been done.
Interesting. That absolutely fits with what her sister Winifred told me, because I switch off when I'm... There's been a bit of a flurry, was she? I mean, rushing around.
Yes, and she was served by a very good, very intelligent staff. But that was rather a bother for me when I first went to the NU, because I was supposed to use Miss Cowell, who became her secretary again
at Morley College.
Is she still there?
No, she's died. She died about a year ago. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Well, she was a very intelligent young woman, but if she saw Eva Hubbard coming into Dean's Yard, which is where our office was, she downed tools, as far as my work was concerned, ready to take up Mrs. Hubbard's.
Well,
that was tiresome.
So she was really a demanding woman, Mrs.
Very
Hubbard.
Demanding.
Interesting. Yes.
Or a personality that made people feel they had to lay down jobs and do it.
So anyway, you take over from her, in a way, don't you?
I did, yes.
How did that handover occur? I mean, did she give you tutorials, so to speak, in being a political secretary, or did you just absorb it?
Really? I absorbed it going round with her if she had interviews, or she'd go with an interview that I was going to, in any case. And she'd... I remember very well her telling me afterwards, I've forgotten who it was interviewed, and instead of sort of questioning my point of view, I put it as straightforwardly as a point of view, as a youth usually does. And she pulled me up on that, which was very good. And we got, my delight was that I was given to the job of helping the society to fight a private bill of Edinburgh Corporation and finding out how it worked and that. To my great delight, I found Eva didn't know how it worked. She hadn't had to deal with a parliamentary bill before, but she didn't let on for some time. But it made such a difference to me, because I felt a novice as I was,
interesting, yes. All this fits, actually, one or two things I'll tell you. Did you feel that she was helpful to you in the handover, so to speak, really? I mean, did she pass on quite a lot of her wisdom to you, do you think? Or did you really have to pick it up yourself?
I wasn't conscious of it.
Mm.
Either way, really. I mean, I knew I had her help. There was this very good secretary at the office still who worked under her.
Mm.
And there was an assistant secretary, Irene Hancock.
Yes, who was the good secretary who was working under?
It was Carl.
Oh, I see. She's the one she took to Morley, yes. Yes, I see. Yes. So anyway, you just...
I wasn't conscious of working for any future. I was married already.
Mm.
And was prepared to take life as it came.
Yes.
I hadn't been able to do the one thing I wanted to do and train myself for.
Yes. That is...
And that's teaching.
Teaching, yes.
I mean, I took the three subjects deliberately because I disapproved of honest people, just honest.
Mm.
And then Eva Hubbard, of course, took herself off. And when we got to Townsend, was she still with us?
Honeybee?
Yes, don't.
It doesn't matter. Shall I switch? That's fine. We were talking about you really wanted to be a teacher, and you didn't really envisage anything except doing what you were doing. So it was, I think it was a rather nice thing to have, wasn't it? I mean,
it was.
As a married woman.
Yes.
Yes.
And as I say, I thought I was living up to this program anyhow.
Yes, yes. So what did you have do, Mrs. Horton, when you took over, and what you just really went straight into the job as political secretary?
Yes.
And that
involved.
And there was
an assistant secretary of the organisation itself, but they made the appointment, my appointment, as organising, parliamentary and organising secretary, so that I could be called in to do any damn thing they wanted.
Mm. So you really were indispensable in that situation.
Useful.
Yes.
But I hadn't any parliamentary political education at all.
Mm.
Nor did I want it.
Mm.
I mean, I don't mean that in the sense of pride.
Mm.
I wasn't interested in going into politics.
Mm.
I wouldn't.
In that sense, you're rather different, I suppose, from Eva, who really, I think, in a way, did want to get into politics, didn't she?
She would have gone into the OCC.
Mm.
Actively, when she retired from Morley.
Mm.
That happened.
Mm. So, what did you have to do? I mean, can you explain to me what a parliamentary and organising secretary does?
Well, there was this corporation bill. I remember the first thing, you see, finding out how its progress was made, and the House of Commons is very good at telling you what you want, or one of the party offices, and badgering MPs and getting them to agree this, that, or the other in the House of Commons, which was quite fun going to sitting in the centre of the universe, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. More so then than now, I suppose. In the sense that the House of Commons had great prestige, didn't it?
Yes, it had.
In a way, it hasn't quite got now, has it?
The last time I had anything to do was with the Ministry of Health Bill. Oh, this was with the London Fawcett Society, and we badgered Mr. Brain, as he was one of the junior ministers concerned with it, and halfway through the argument he suddenly said, "Do you know more about this than I do?" It was some restriction on married women.
Could you tell me a bit about Dean's Yard? I mean, I don't know anything about what it looked like and what there was there then. I mean, can you...
The church house wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
There were terrace houses, and we were the corner one. If you go in from the Abbey end, the left-hand one of the top row was ours.
Yes.
And next door to us was the then Lord Chancellor.
Birkenhead.
Labour.
Oh, yes. I'm afraid I don't know. I ought to know, but I don't know. Anyway,
I ought to know.
The Labour.
And our office ran the length of the house at right angles to Dean's yard, so that we had rooms with windows looking down towards the river.
Millbank?
Towards Millbank, but there's a road that goes down there.
Mm.
So what we had in Dean's yard, the boys out playing in the square at lunchtime and kicking up all the grass one time.
That's the Westminster School boys. That's right. Yes. Mm.
And the choir schools on the other side, at least it was then. So we used to hear them, which was rather nice. And then when a military gentleman was having a memorial service or being buried, his charger was brought forward with a sword and rained to the railings outside our office, to the great excitement of the staff.
So you saw quite a lot and heard quite a lot going on there, really?
Yes, in a sense. It is a delightful quarter.
Yes. But if you go in the front door, Mrs. Horton, what do you see, and what is there that the National Union uses? Well, how the rooms arrange and what's in them? Is that asking too much?
No, I think I can remember a bit. It was a terraced house, 3 or 4 stories high, on the right back, not the front, not the right. It was a big room with the window onto the dean's, onto the yard, and that had the what is now the Women's Service Library.
Oh yes.
The Fawcett Library. It was left to the NUSEC originally.
Yes.
And we had that with filing cabinets, and a certain amount of work was done there and typist. Then behind that was a smaller room with the accountants and
subscriptions and things like that. Yes.
And
the
radio machine going. And then along the passage, a little room on the left. And straight on, another long, narrow room with this window down the house, and that was my room.
Mm-hmm.
Had been Mrs. Hubbock's, but she had the little one after she...
I see. Mm-hmm. This is all on the ground floor?
All the ground floor. I think we were only on the ground floor.
Mm. I see.
I don't know who had the others.
Mm. So you didn't have the basement?
The place was locked up at the weekend, so I could never get to it if I wanted to.
So it's quite a small affair, really, is it?
Oh, quite. It was, we had an executive committee, I suppose, once a month, about that, which was mostly London, but quite a few from Scotland. Mrs. Taylor, who was on it when I was interviewed, and...
Where would you have your committee rooms, actually? Where did you have your committee meetings?
For a time, we had to go hiring. In fact, we borrowed a room from the London Society.
Did you really?
Which had its new building, you see.
Oh, I see, yes. Yes. So you went over to Women's Service House.
That's right.
Yes,
but
I see.
Just before my time, or perhaps it had just happened, I think, the London Society withdrew from the NUWS, the NUSEC, because they didn't hold with all the...
The family allowance. Yes. That split must have been rather central to things when you first went there, wasn't it?
Yes, it had.
Those who had backed Mrs. Fawcett and those who hadn't.
We were in a, just had the disturbance of it without understanding what the personalities had been. I've come across papers since and understood it more. There was a Miss Macmillan up in Edinburgh.
That's right.
Some of the opposition.
That's Crystal Macmillan, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, my impression is, you must correct me if I'm wrong, is that on the whole, the rather more conservative type of people were with Mrs. Fawcett on that, and the rather more adventurous Labour-y type of people, or Lib-Lab type of people, were more with Eleanor Rathbone.
Well, of course, birth control was a new idea, and what a mess they in BBC made the other day of Mary Stopes.
Did they? I didn't see that.
The Velvet Glove series.
Yes, I didn't see that.
I looked at it particularly because my husband and I were both members of the CBC and went to many meetings and knew her, heard her quite a lot. And also there was all this antipathy to it.
You mean antipathy to birth control? Or
yes.
Was there really?
Or to the publicity. Good heavens, yes.
Extraordinary. I wish I'd seen it, eventually, to see how wrong it was. I mean,
I can give you an example. My family allowed the younger members complete freedom to what we read, and my other sisters were advanced readers. I mean, modern stuff and up to date. They sent us a wonderful visit of H.G. Wells when we were about 12, when it just first came out.
Mm.
Then when Mary Stopes' books started coming out, my elder sister got them, and she brought one up to the... She had a flat in Manchester Street, and had a house and had a slept there, and she'd brought it up for Mother and Anne to see, and needed it back that same day, apparently, and we children were asked to take it over.
Mm.
Well, we sat down promptly and read it.
Yes, yes.
But we didn't say, until I was out some while later with Anne, and I don't know how the subject cropped up. And I'll never forget, her jaw dropped when she heard that I had already read it. And I was 17 by this time, I think.
Mm.
But the attitude, I mean, my aunt wouldn't talk about a birth. And we just picked up from whispered conversation between her and old friends that somebody had had a baby.
Mm.
It just wasn't talked about.
Yes, extraordinary to modern eyes, isn't it?
Yes.
When you went to the National Union, did you see very much of Eleanor Rathbone at all?
Yes, she was still active as president in those days, was chairman, was an executive.
Mm.
So it was active with all the stuff
being done right. Did she sort of take you under her wing and say, you know, this, that and the others?
Oh, no, no. But the best person to tell you about her as a person to work with is the one you said you'd seen.
Mrs. Soper, yes, she's been very interesting.
I don't think Eleanor Rathbone ever felt justified for her faith in me. Well, I was unskilled and unknowledgeable.
Yes. Mm.
And she had Eva Hubbock still behind her.
Mm. And she was moving out anyway, wasn't she, in a way? I mean, she was becoming interested in India and...
She was, but she was making the society do it.
Mm.
The NUSEC had to run the society for that.
Mm.
And she... Anne Caton, who...
No, I haven't come across her, no.
She was a woman from Liverpool, I think, who wrote a book on the women of India and the position of women of India.
Oh, yes.
To back Eleanor Rathbone's work.
Yes, yes.
And that was partly through the office. I did the cataloguing of it, or indexing on it.
You feel that she really harnessed the National Union to her own personal causes, rather?
That's why the London Society wasn't the vertical form of it.
Mm.
And she was one of those people who said one thought at a time. And while she had India on her plate, she wasn't worried about anything else. Then when she had something else, it was all that.
Mm.
Very much one.
Single-minded.
Very single-minded, yes.
Yes. What sort of person was she, Mrs. Horton? I mean, she was rather en déshabille, so to speak, as you say. I mean,
very good-looking.
Was she?
Well, very nice features, tiny little nose and beautiful blue eyes, deep Irish blue. I don't know if it was Irish blood or not. And high coloured. And she must have had black hair, she went with that beautiful silver white.
Mm.
And she carried herself very well. She liked nice clothes. But she wouldn't spend a penny on herself when she could well afford it. And she was on the Liverpool City Council and then a Member of Parliament. And even then, I think I'm right in saying even then, but before that, certainly, she never travel first.
Mm. She was a stately woman to look at, was she, in the way she moved around? Rather grand.
Yes, she could. Well, not so grand. She doesn't. She
didn't dress up.
She didn't dress up and she didn't have quick movements.
I see. But she was an impressive figure, really, was she, as president to have?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm. When, of course, the Women's Service House was only just built, wasn't it, then? But presumably there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, even though the LSWS had left. There must have been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing between these two headquarters, wasn't there, at the time?
Well, to the extent that we had lunch over there, because they had ran a lunch.
Yes.
Things, and some of the executive members very disgracefully tried to make me take them as my guests. paying for themselves, certainly, but I mean, it wasn't the thing. And the Mastrici, who was secretary then, took exception to this, quite rightly. So that was stopped. But we didn't, I'm trying to remember what sort of things they were doing. The junior council I'd never heard of till I came, hardly at all. They didn't chase after me. In fact, they very much cross-examined me before I was accepted as a member. Mm. The first thing I did, I thought, was to join the London Society. Yeah. And the little Miss Blackwell looked me up and down and cross-examined me. I mean, the fact that I was NUSCE didn't help.
I see. That's interesting. So, are you almost in a situation of being mutually embattled against each other then? I mean,
yes, almost. There was an annual meeting of the London Society, which they spoke pretty firmly what they thought about the NUC, disapproving of it.
Because I remember somebody telling me, I think it was Miss Dewey told me, that she remembered Eva Hubbock saying, "Oh, this is to the LSWS. Oh, so you're the cat that wants to walk by itself," or something like that.
Yes.
You know, feeling rather strongly, obviously, about that secession.
Yes. Well, the Fawcett Society itself, I think, rather sensibly decided on one thing to concentrate on, and that was the employment movement.
Mm.
And then it hived off the Women's Employment Federation.
Mm.
So as it had that to concentrate on, it wasn't interested in these other things.
Though it would support things it agreed with, I suppose. And not
yes,
if
it was
didn't.
Agreeing that it was wanted for. Mm. Yes, but they, you see, they were right behind the act that first opened the professions to women.
Yes.
And it was those young women in the, newly in the professions that they felt it was necessary to help.
Mm.
That each was finding different sorts of complications in the man-made society into which they were thrown.
Yes.
And of course they were still at it when the last war was on.
Yes.
Because in spite of the experience of the First World War and what had happened since, the army, as you may remember, wouldn't give family allowances or special arrangements for women officers, either army or air force.
Mm. There's also all that business about compensation as well, wasn't there?
Yes.
Which really was rather scandalous, I think. But
which we were fighting on.
Yes.
And there was a woman power committee in the
Lords.
So that it had its work pretty well cut out.
Mm. Who were the sort of leading figures then behind the split, really, that is leading the LSWS off?
Well, curiously enough, Eva Hubbock.
Was she really?
She was the instigator of the NUTT, of the Townsman's Guild.
Was, oh, sorry, you're talking about that. I see, yes.
Well,
yes.
No, I'm merely saying now the split off.
Yes. No, I really meant the split between the LSWS and NUSEC earlier, before you came.
Yes. No. Then the names I know quite definitely was Miss Macmillan.
Yes.
I don't think there was a group that were called the Bolters.
Mm.
And the only person who could tell you those, I think, is Irene Hancock. I'm not sure if she's still alive.
Yes,
she's
I don't know. I don't know, I was making a... but anyway, it's before you came, so it was not really... It's not sensible for me to ask you.
It wasn't the thing that extended itself.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, could we move on then to the second split, which is a split of a different sort, isn't it, really? It's not a split of antagonism so much as a split of growth, in a way, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Can you sort of describe how that happened? I mean,
how the Townsman's Guild came into being?
Yes.
The first idea was put out in public by Dame Millicent at the annual meeting, I suppose it was 28, when the bill was just going through. And she'd been reading something of Lord Haldane's and said, adult education of new voters is your task. And that gave the idea, I think, to Eva Hubbock, who got hold of the secretary then of the Women's Institutes, had been secretary of the NUSCC. And in fact, they took our colours. Red, white and green.
Yes, indeed, yes.
That's what the NUSEC is called.
Yes, yes.
And I've forgotten the name of the woman. Anyhow, she got hold of Lady Denman and various other people, and we had roundtable conferences on possibilities, or purely educational thing. And the NFWI suggested that one of their former organisers would curse them for producing, but this was through Lady... which is Lady Marcheson.
Roundtable conferences and they're getting
yes,
launched.
Yes, and discussions with the NFWI. There was a lady, she became Lady Cushenden. She was Miss Marcheson.
Oh, yes.
The sister of Lord Marcheson, as he became. He was
a Tory Party.
Tory Party
yes,
leader.
Yes, yes, I know. Sort of whip or something, wasn't
and
she?
She was a militant, ex-militant suffrage.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
She who got the NFW, she was active in the NFWI somewhere, and she got them to introduce this woman who we cursed them for, because she was really the most unsatisfactory, frightfully snobbish creature. Mm. Now, one of the difficulties, a women's institute is a cross-section of the whole village. If you go into a new housing estate, where do you get a cross-section?
Mm.
And where do you get the leader?
Mm.
It was really hard work.
Mm.
And it needed great tact and great intelligence on the part of the organisers. Well, eventually we got this woman to help us form two or three experimental things, and obviously there was enthusiasm for it. We needed money to employ some people to do it. Eleanor Rathbone put that money up anonymously.
Did she really? Her own money?
Her own
yes.
money.
Yes.
Well, she was wealthy.
Yes.
And then we discovered that the Carnegie United Kingdom Trust might be approached, and we worked out, because we hadn't anything much of an experience to build a case on, but we worked out, Alice Franklin and I worked out a memorandum, said what was in our minds, and Colonel Mitchell was then the secretary.
He was an old suffrage man,
exactly,
wasn't he? Yes.
It's
all in the network. Yes,
yes.
Yes.
And I still remember his saying, because townswomen, we didn't have the name Townswomen's Guilds, but it was four women at any rate. He said, I see in the future it won't be women's guilds, it'll be just guilds, men and women.
Mm.
And they are at the stage now of wondering how to cope, because they do have, I think some of the women's institutes have men too.
Yes, yes.
So we got a at first, the difficulty was the executive committee of the old NUSEC was carrying on as the National Council for Equal Citizenship, just concentrating on the political side of the work, while separately we had a committee to...
The NUTG. Yes.
As it became. And before the NUTG became an existence of its own, we had these people who really were, I suppose, snobbish is the word to use. They despised the unintelligent people we were trying to get to, which the Ministry of Education, after the act during the last war, made it possible for local authorities to do adult education in general. We put up an appeal for grant aid, and they called the guilds Montessori adult education, which I think was a very good expression. Because it was. It was stimulating their interest, and they go out from that. They weren't, as long as the guild didn't organize controversial things, it could discuss them as much as it liked. And that was a very difficult thing to get people to understand. We got it in the end.
I didn't quite follow, Mrs. Horton. When you say there were people who despised, where were these people in the organised in the National Union?
The executive committee, yes.
Were they really? I see.
Yes, they didn't. They didn't want to be bothered. They were efficient citizens, and they weren't interested in education.
So I see.
It is a different thing, educating.
So there was quite a lot of opposition inside the National Union to the very idea of forming the Towns Women's Guild then?
I don't know that they actually showed opposition, but they weren't understanding of what was needed.
Yes, I see. There was a certain sort of intellectual arrogance in a way, wasn't
that
there?
Is
it. Yes, I see.
Yes, arrogance is the word.
Yes, interesting.
But we got an advisory committee together with Lady Denman advising us too. I think she was on it. And we had Imogen Holst for music. And Lady Daniel, the wife of one of the trustees of the National Gallery. All intellectually.
Arts. Yes.
Yes, but intellectually, you see, at the top of
the
subject.
Yes.
To advise us on how to work programmes that people might like. And we went to Vaughan Williams for advice. We had to raise money, of course. And at first we ran theatrical tea parties. We found Edith Evans, for example, the kind of person we could go to and ask if she would speak at a tea party that we'd get a hostess for. Or we might have the hostess first. Lady Denman gave. They had money in those days.
Yes.
And about 50 people to come. It was a very elementary way of raising money, but it was publicity as well, of course. And those people weren't disparaging or arrogant about it. But the people like Elizabeth McKellen were liable to be.
Because Elizabeth McKellen would have presumably quite a lot of influence with Eleanor Rathbone as well.
Yes,
so it's rather damaging if she takes that attitude, I would have thought. Yes. So was it originally seen as the beginning of a split, of not a split exactly, but of a growth? I mean, was the idea, do you think, but I can't quite put myself clearly, what did the people who initially initiated the experiment envisage what actually eventually happened? That is, that the Towns Women's Guild should go off on their own and there should be a council?
Yes. I think probably not. I'm not sure. The council, you see, the council took over the political aspect of the NUACC, and it was seen that they didn't work. It was together. It was a false.
Yes. For part of the reasons you've mentioned, I suppose.
Yes. The sort of thing, you see, to belong to the NCEC or the NUACC in the old days, you had to agree to the programme or its objects at any rate. Well, this was planting a thing on people who had never given thought to any of these subjects. And Mrs. Corbett Ashby's sister-in-law, Mrs. Adrian Corbett, she's dead now, was chairman of the executive committee. And she wanted them all to, I mean, if they didn't, if they started discussing at an ordinary meeting fields, a controversial subject, wanting to send a resolution up to the annual meeting, well, we can't do this, so we better do something else. And they just send up, say, a thing on women police that was harmless from the point of view of a debate. And they did see that they hadn't studied any question, anything of the question themselves. So we were very happy when we got the Carnegie Trust to make us entirely educational.
Yes,
wouldn't give us money unless we were.
I see. I was just really wondering why they gave you the money. I mean, they were very good also to the WEF as well later, weren't they, the Carnegie Trust?
I think so, yes.
Why did they do it, actually, do you think?
Well,
because you put up a good memorandum, or...
Well, Mitchell was sympathetic.
Yes.
And if you look at the terms of the Carnegie Trust, it's for the general public. And that's where we came across cross swords worn less with them at the outbreak of the last war. Because they'd given us grants for the employment of an art advisor and music advisor and drama advisor. And Wilkie, who was then secretary, wrote saying, you will of course not continue this, and cut the grant. Whereas we, CIMA, had just been formed, and we were considering we were doing just what the country wanted.
Could you remind me what CIMA is?
It's now the Arts Council.
I see. Mm.
It was the Council for Education, Music and the Arts.
I see, yes, yes. And you felt that in the wartime...
We were one of the first to get a grant from them in the end.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So really it's the educational aspect and the sort of education for citizenship aspect which attracts the Carnegie Trustees,
yes.
Plus a sympathetic man there and a good presentation of a case, really, by you. yes, yes. That really gets you off the ground, doesn't it, that grant?
Well, it did at the beginning.
Mm.
And then the Ministry of Education itself gave us a grant after the...
Mm.
I suppose after this last one, just after it.
Mm. So anyway, you tried to yoke the two together. I do have your tea, and let's switch it off while you have some tea, because then you can relax.
Was the Honourable Mrs. Franklin.
Oh, yes, yes.
She was an aunt of Alice Franklin, who was co-opted through Eva Hubbock. She was... we were wanting somebody with intelligence and time. She had it. She had recently retired from her permanent post, which was Overseas Settlement of British Women. Is that a
society? Oh, yes, yes. Gladys Pott.
That's right, yes.
Gladys Pott's interesting because she was a big auntie, of course.
Yes, I know.
Do tell me about her. What was she like?
Well, I only met her in her later days, of course.
Did you?
But knew of her through Alice Franklin, who worked for her.
Mm.
And she was a great card. She'd been brought up, the only daughter, I think, with brothers, and had the tutors that her brothers had, and so didn't really see things from a woman's point of view at all. She was very intelligent, and at one stage, I believe, her office was furnished with a mat, you know, from coming from the outside, with the NUWSS letters on it.
Was it really? Good heavens. But she's an interesting woman, actually, because she's an example of one of the aunties who becomes, in a sense, converted. I mean, she's just so obviously able that she has everything to gain from women being...
Yes, and of course that's the sort of thing that's happened with Florence Nightingale.
She
did what she wanted as she was.
Yes, yes. Mm. And Mrs. Webb, in a way, in her auntie days.
Yes, yes.
So the Honourable Mrs. Franklin was the person who really ran the NUTG in its earliest days, was she?
No, she was the sort of last of the separate. She stayed with the NCEC.
I see. Mm.
But it was decided we should divide. But it was divide, not split.
Yes.
And those are the executive... well, the executive was elected by the annual meetings. That didn't arise. I don't remember how long Mrs. Franklin was chairman. Not so very long. But her niece was on for a time, and we co-opted a woman again through the WI recommendation who had been active in the women's institutes in Warwickshire. But she was hopeless from an educational point of view. Couldn't get there.
Not a good teacher.
Not at all a good teacher. And, they were going to raise funds through the guilds themselves by running quiz drives or something or other.
Mm.
She came into the office to draft a letter, which was telling them what to do, but not why. That sort of approach.
Mm.
And she also had impossible handwriting, as had Alice Franklin, so I got very skilled at...
What difference did the formation of Towns Women's Guilds make to your job as organising and parliamentary secretary then? Presumably it just increased your workload no end.
Well, I became secretary of the TGs.
I see. It just got too much for you to do the whole lot yourself.
Yes. Yes.
I see. Yes.
Mm. I've forgotten what the NCEC did about it. I think Mrs. Soper came out this day.
That's right, I think she joined them as secretary, yes, that's right.
I didn't want to stay with the other, you see.
Didn't you really? I see, you really felt happier in the new...
Oh, I was thrilled.
Yes.
And it really was exciting, discovering ways and means of doing things.
Mm.
And new techniques.
You like the art side of things, I imagine, as well.
Yes. Yes.
Which you hadn't had much scope for, I suppose, in the National Union. And you like the broadening out of recruitment, I suppose, and getting at new people.
Yes, and it was sort of building something that was going to last.
Yes.
Like working for the London Society, it was so nice working with the library.
Yes.
You feel that is what matters. There's
something, some permanence about it.
Yes.
Of course, there is permanence about legislative achievement, I suppose, but it's rather intangible, isn't it? You can't sort of see it, can
yes.
you? I mean, that's the trouble. But,
Oh, unless, like, Edith Picton Turbot, for you can recall, that's my bill.
Yes, her little death.
That's right.
Yes, yes. Tell me about her. I've read her autobiography, actually. What sort of woman was she?
She was on the executive. She may have been on my first executive, but she was certainly on the executive when I was working for the NUSCC. And she was very self-opinionated. She'd arrive at our office and swagger in and be horrified that the little girl would open the door, probably change once a month. We changed girls frequently. Didn't know who she was. And would say as much.
Didn't she? Mm. She rather gave herself airs, didn't she?
Very much so.
Did she really?
Yes. She was a pleasant person. I don't remember hearing her in the house at all.
There's an awful lot of stuff about her ancestry, her military ancestry, in her autobiography. I mean, she's always going on about that. So you obviously was rather self-conscious about her
yes,
family.
Yes, I think the saying used to go around our office that India's loss... No, India's loss, our gain, because it wasn't our gain.
India's loss is not England's gain. Yes, I see, yes, interesting. But,
And there was a complication of women in the clerical, in the services, in the church.
Yes, she was interested
in
that. Yes.
And neither the NUSCC nor the London Society officially took a line.
That's surprising in a way, isn't it? I mean, it would fit with the LSWS's position, really, wouldn't it? I mean, just accept broadening opportunities for women where...
Yes, and yet it was touching religious beliefs, which we didn't feel we had any authority. I mean, anything that's concerned with Parliament, yes. But not... religious people were so difficult about it, anyhow, we couldn't argue with them.
Yes, it's a tricky cause, isn't it? I suppose,
yes.
Right, in a way, like birth control,
yes.
is a tricky
Lord
subject,
Cecil Selwood.
Yes.
He was president of the Fawcett Society.
Yes.
At one stage, and he disapproved.
Oh, did he?
And that prevented the society.
Aha, I see.
Going all
yes.
up for it.
Yes, I see. Yes, that would fit, yes. Yes. Can I give you some more tea?